Glyphosate is ubiquitous. That is to say, glyphosate is in the ground, in the plants, in the water, in the air, and in us. That glyphosate is ubiquitous has led us to ask, is there a connection between glyphosate and the COVID-19 coronavirus?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1236th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Luganville who are tuned into the Food Chain podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, when the German pharmaceutical giant Bayer purchased the U.S. seed company Monsanto for $63 billion, many wondered why. After all, the patent on Monsanto's principal money-making product, the weed-killing herbicide trade name Roundup, has expired, and its active ingredient, glyphosate, is now available for anyone to bottle up and sell. And plants that previously had been killed by glyphosate were developing an immunity to the chemical. And resistant superweeds are popping up in farmlands across the nation. And farmers themselves were complaining of sicknesses like non-Hodgkin lymphoma and pointing their fingers at glyphosate as the cause. And Bayer, though admitting no guilt, has just agreed to pay $10 billion to settle the farmers' glyphosate lawsuits. Given all the negatives, little wonder then why people scratch their head at the wisdom of Bayer buying Monsanto. Why bother? But perhaps Bayer knows the extent to which industrial agriculture has come to rely on glyphosate and how difficult it will be to do business without the weed-killing pesticide. And so one can safely assume that Bayer is confident that glyphosate will continue to be ubiquitous in the environment, and that leads some to wonder to what effect, and for one to actually say there is a connection between glyphosate and the COVID-19 coronavirus. That one person would be Dr. Stephanie Seneff, who is a senior research scientist at MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory, but is actually lazing about the beach in Kauai. Isn't that right, Doctor?
Well, I am in Kauai, which is wonderful. We have very little COVID-19 here, which is also really, really nice.
That's really, really nice. And wonder why? Have you wondered why?
Well, yes. I mean, I've been amazed at how much evidence I've gathered to link glyphosate to severe outcome with COVID-19. I think the patterns are stunning. I think it's a smoking gun. And I don't have all the evidence. You know, the research hasn't been done. But I think the links are really, really strong, and it, particularly because it ties into biofuel development.
Sure. So before we go there, the world has come to know you as quite the critic of glyphosate over the past few years. And you have pointed out that there actually is a link, and that I'm reading this from your white paper that you published recently. Stephanie Seneff says, I strongly suspect that the degree to which a person is susceptible to COVID-19 is proportional to the degree to which they have been exposed to glyphosate. Now, Dr. Seneff, Monsanto and Bayer have scientific proof beyond a shadow of a doubt that glyphosate is safe and poses no risk to human beings. Now, one of the things I've noticed lately in public discourse is when somebody puts up an argument against a particularly contentious issue, often the other side comes back and says, look, the science is settled, and that's right. That, and you can't talk anymore. So as a research scientist with one of the nation's premier scientific institutions, I wanted to ask you, do you think science is settled, is settling, or is unsettled?
you know, I think it's unsettled, and I think it's actually very frustrating that Monsanto managed to do really shoddy research way back when, and they saw evidence of harm. They hid it, and then they concealed it to the EPA, and then we got this approval. They pushed this message that it's perfectly harmless to humans because we don't have the enzyme that it attacks in the plants. How could we possibly be susceptible to glyphosate? And that message has become so pervasive in the society that people feel very, very comfortable with this chemical. They think, and if, in fact, the government feels very comfortable. They know it's in the food. They don't bother to test the food because it's harmless. Why waste money just testing something that's harmless? I mean, once you assume something is harmless, you don't look for it. And I find that very, very frustrating because there's not enough research actually finding out where it is. And that's part of the issue here is I'm claiming something that I haven't proven because it hasn't been tested. But we need to do that. Somebody needs to do that research because the evidence is really, really strong. One thing I will say to start off, we know that the people who are most susceptible to COVID-19, to getting an acute reaction and dying, are those who have all these different, you know, comorbidities. They have obesity, diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, lung problems, all these issues. And studies, we have published papers. I have worked with collaborators such as Nancy Swanson, and we've published papers that show incredibly strong correlations between the rise in glyphosate usage over the past 20 years and the rise of all of these diseases. Each one of these diseases matches extremely well. We know we have an epidemic in diabetes, an epidemic in obesity. These things happen when people start getting chronically exposed to glyphosate, and my interest has been in figuring out why, and that turns out to be a very, very interesting story.
Well, yeah, and that's one of the things I certainly wanted to ask you about. How on earth did you go from being a computer and artificial intelligence research scientist to becoming a disease epidemiologist?
That is quite a transition. And luckily, I have been funded for many, many years by a computer company in Taiwan, Quanta Computers, and they have just been so great at continuing to support my work as I transitioned into different topics. I had been working on developing conversational interaction on the computer to help an English-speaking person learn Chinese. So that is a very big difference between that and what I'm doing now. I basically announced to them, 12 years ago, I said, I want to do this now, and they said, fine. They've been funding this research ever since then. It's just been wonderful.
Wow.
And, yeah, it's great.
So when you research something, do you use your computer science and our artificial intelligence skills to dig into issues and find correlations and connect the dots? Is that what you do?
Absolutely. Yeah, and also gathering, I can get lots of, you know, from the web, you can get lots of materials. For example, I did drug side effects. You get drug side effect reports, and you look at statistics and word patterns, and you can find correlations between drugs and disease. I started working with, like, statin drugs and vaccines. I was really concerned about vaccines. I was interested specifically in autism, and that's what got me started because I saw the autism rates rising dramatically in the 2006-2007 timeframe. And I felt frustrated because people weren't really focusing on environmental factors. I knew it had to be environmental.
So
it was all about genetics. And genetics, you know, people who have genetic susceptibilities are going to get it first, but everybody's going to get it eventually if we keep this up.
So when did the glyphosate apple fall on your head? And you...
Yeah, it took me 5 years. I was searching and I was, you know, looking at things one by one, and they weren't correlating, and I was really frustrated. I thought the vaccines were playing a role, and I still think that. But I didn't think they were the total story. I knew there was something else. So I was actually frustrated after 5 years of looking when I happened to just by chance to hear Professor Don Huber give a two-hour presentation on glyphosate. I am embarrassed to admit that I didn't know what glyphosate was when I walked in the room. And when I left that two-hour presentation, I was ready to go. I have never looked back. I basically immediately dug into glyphosate and never looked back. I basically dropped everything else I was doing and focused on glyphosate. And that's been to this day. I mean, I am very confident that I'm right. And it frustrates me no end because we see all these things going, all these diseases. We're all so sick. You know, the United States has a huge health care problem. Nobody can afford to pay for health care. So many people are getting sick. And now, of course, COVID-19. You look at the United States statistics, and this is very interesting to me. The United States, with 4.2% of the world's population, has 26% of the world's deaths from COVID-19. So that's a huge difference. And number two, well, the number two biggest contributor is Brazil, and they were a Johnny-come-lately to the party. It took them a while to get the infection going, but once they did, now they've got 11% of all the deaths with 2.7% of the world's population. So Brazil and the United States are getting hit really hard.
And so what is the correlation between Brazil and the United States?
glyphosate. First of all, huge use of glyphosate in both of those countries. And secondly, interestingly enough, huge investment in the development of biofuels. And I think that's linked. So United States and Brazil are number one, number two by far in the biofuel industry, consuming biofuels, biodiesel, biogas, bioethanol, biohome heating oil. There's all this biofuel that's going into the quietly going into the fuel system, and we're not paying attention. It's very interesting because those biofuels are derived from products that are contaminated with glyphosate almost exclusively in
now,
those two countries.
Dr. Stephanie, nobody's brought this up but you, or at least that I know of.
It shocks me that other people aren't seeing this. It seems so obvious to me. And, you know, Europe is also getting hit hard, and they've also been a leader in the biofuel development, particularly biodiesel. They import a lot of biodiesel from Australia. They produce it from GMO Roundup Ready soybeans. You know, and so, and then they're spraying glyphosate. They don't have GMOs in Europe, but their own sources are, they're using glyphosate on the olive trees, and they're using the olive oil to produce energy for that region in northern Italy that was hit so hard by glyphosate. You know, you really can connect. I could give you lots of examples. A very interesting example is Germany. There was an outbreak recently in a meat processing plant. So we're seeing all these meat processing plants, right, getting huge epidemics. They're really getting outbreaks in meat processing plants across this country in Germany. The German one was interesting because I happened to find on the web. I basically see, oh, my God, here's a meat processing plant. Where is it located? Look, let me do some research, see if I can find something. And sure enough, there was an article about this meat processing plant working with the municipal sewer system. So this is going on in New York City, too, by the way. It's a sewer system for the human waste. They throw in their, you know, waste from the animals, so the manure from the cows and the waste from the meat processing, the fats and whatnot, the bones. They throw all that into the mix, and they churn the crank. They use an anaerobic digester, which is involved with anaerobic bacteria, to convert that all that stuff into biogas, which is basically like natural gas, but it's derived from these, you know, various sources that are. The idea is, one of the ideas is to reduce petroleum use. It's actually, you know, it makes sense. The other idea is...
So we're going to save the earth, right? We're going to save the earth by making biofuels and not using petroleum. But something's...
Right, and then more than that, you want to catch that gas rather than... They used to just sort of let go. Like, they, you know, you have to get rid of waste somehow, and you process it. It produces a lot of methane gas. You let it go into the atmosphere. Methane is like 60 times worse than carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas. So they're like, oh, gosh, we can't let this gas go. We have to trap it. Now, once they trap it, well, we might as well burn it, right? So let's just ship it into the municipal gas lines in New York City, for example. And, you know, Chelsea, Massachusetts, is by far the hard-hit town in Massachusetts. It's sitting right next to the airport. It's got these big tanks. It stores all the aviation biofuel.
Well, before we go there, you made a wonderful example. Talking about a restaurant up in Seattle, and that's a little place to start that would might really help us get some traction on where you want to take us, because most of us, of course, are familiar with the notion that we have to eat organic bread, because if we don't, we'll be eating glyphosate in the bread, and we don't want to do that. But what you're talking about entirely different is we're talking about the air we breathe and how that air gets into our lungs.
Right.
And so there's the big trouble. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What, with Dr. Stephanie Seneff, Senior Research Scientist, MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory. And today we're talking about glyphosate, that stuff that's everywhere and in us. Right back.
And now, back to What's Eating What. Back to What's Eating What, Michael Olson.
Well, there you go. That didn't quite work, but we fixed it. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson. Today we're talking about glyphosate in our environment and in our bodies. And we're wondering if there is a connection between the ubiquitous glyphosate and the COVID-19 and our vulnerability to COVID-19. And that's a very curious thing, because Dr. Stephanie Seneff says, yes, there is a connection. Dr. Stephanie, the coronavirus is pretty much ubiquitous too, is it not? What happened with this COVID-19 business? Why are we so taken by it, as it were?
Yeah, well, what I think is, and it's really quite striking when you look at the difference among different countries, and people don't really understand, but look at Taiwan, right next to China. Very, very few cases. I think 7 deaths so far in a country with a pretty large population. They don't use any biofuels. They shut it down. They tried for a little while, and they shut it down completely, I think, in 2012, because they were finding that the humid air was causing microbes to grow in the fuel tanks, and it wasn't really working. They just quit.
Oh, so bugs were growing in the fuel tanks.
Because of the humidity, it's hard to do, and they decided it wasn't a good idea, and they quit. And they also use very little glyphosate. They don't have any GMOs, you know, so they've got double protection, I think, less glyphosate and no biofuels. But you look at and I've studied pretty deeply on New York City because that's
take us up to Seattle and take us to the restaurant that you write about, and because of Robert and Elizabeth Marr's restaurant. Tell us a little bit about that story, and I think it'll help us come to grips with where you want to take us here.
Right. Well, it's basically air pollution, and the restaurant happened to be situated not too far from a major interstate highway, multi-lane, where these, you know, big trucks and buses were driving by all day long while they worked at the restaurant, and they're spewing, you know, diesel fuel. So basically, diesel fuel, I think, is an important contributor, spewing out of the gas tanks of these, poorly tuned engines. And we know diesel fuel is toxic. There have been plenty of papers written about that. In fact, there are papers that have compared biodiesel to normal diesel and found that biodiesel is more toxic than normal diesel. It causes more inflammation in the lungs. It releases more nitrogen oxides, more sulfur dioxide. It's not good. The biofuel is not a quality fuel.
So diesel bad to start with, but then you put biofuels in the diesel. And what are biofuels for those who don't know?
Yeah, well, that's what's so interesting. And I have to confess that I had not studied biofuels until COVID-19 hit. I became very interested to learn more about them, and it's quite fascinating. And they've been developing, by the way, very rapidly. So we've had a big increase in the use of biofuels, especially in the United States, over the past few years. And they're learning the technology and perfecting it and getting better at it, and then they're using it more. They basically take, for example, they can take the residue of the crop, the stalks of the wheat crop, after they've harvested the grain. They take all that residue and they put it on a barge, and they take it down the river, and they send it to this big, processing plant where they convert it into biodiesel fuel. And they can do that with sugarcane crop and corn crop, all these crops. Wheat and sugarcane are both sprayed with glyphosate right before harvest. So there you're going to have lots of glyphosate in those crops. They also get the residue from the forest industry, and they spray the forest very heavily with glyphosate to kill the hardwood trees so that they can plant softwoods, which grow faster. So they've been using lots of glyphosate in the forest. And then you can get manure, for example, from the cows. You can throw that in. And they have these anaerobic digesters, which make biogas. And then they have these other processing plants that make biodiesel fuel. So you have both biogas, which is basically natural gas, mostly methane. But then who knows what all else is in there? And even the Wikipedia on biogas says that a property of the natural biogas that's produced from the from the waste food industry is going to have more toxic herbicides and insecticides.
But doesn't the process, the anaerobic processing of these crop waste, does not that break down the glyphosate?
That would be the hope, and that's the question. That really is the question, and I don't know the answer to that, and I don't know that anybody else does either. And also, the engine could be burning it up too, because the engine
if that was the case, Dr. Stephanie, don't you think we could take some biofuels and just check the biofuels to see if they have glyphosate in them?
Exactly, that's what needs to be done.
Okay,
and also then to look at whether plant is releasing glyphosate in the process of processing it. Glyphosate's not easy to break down, and that most microbes don't know what to do with it. So it's not obvious that they're going to break it down.
Okay.
And even the glyphosate could be just causing the other things that are disturbing the plants, such that they're producing more nitrogen oxides and sulfur dioxides and all these other toxic things. So it's possible that it's an indirect effect. But I believe it's direct, and I'll tell you it makes sense to me, because glyphosate, my studies indicate that glyphosate suppresses the innate immune system.
Mm-hmm.
And when the innate immune system is suppressed, you get an overreaction to an infection. And that's what we're seeing. What we're seeing with COVID-19 makes a lot of sense. to me, in terms of glyphosate causing it. And, of course, all these correlations with all these people who have obesity and whatnot, that obesity to me is an indicator, in many cases, of glyphosate poisoning, chronic glyphosate poisoning. So it's a second-level correlation, but because the people who have these diseases, they're more sensitive. Maybe one of the reasons why they're more sensitive is because they've got more glyphosate in their body. The glyphosate messes up the proteins. According to my research, it messes up many proteins, and specifically proteins in the innate immune system that are essential for trapping viruses. It's very interesting science. And again, this is a theory that I have, and I'm getting very little traction on it because, Monsanto's people are making sure everybody knows that it's not possible what I'm saying. But I don't see why it's not possible because it makes sense. And there are other examples. This is the idea that glyphosate is getting into proteins by mistake in place of the coding amino acid glycine. It's an amino acid analog of glycine. That's known. And it's also known that many different amino acid analogs cause disease by substituting for natural amino acids. That's a known process. They're just saying glyphosate can't do it. And I don't see why it can't, because there's no reason why it can't hook up to the chain.
Well, they've been saying that it's harmless for a long time now. But at any rate, you talk about the Robert and Elizabeth Mars restaurant up in Seattle, pretty close to Interstate 5 right there in downtown Seattle. And they both got COVID at pretty much the same time, and
right.
both of them passed and both died.
Right.
So what was unusual? What did you find unusual about that?
Well, it made me think of the air pollution as being the cause of their bad reaction to COVID-19. It was sort of a hint that might be why they died, instead of just many people just get it and don't really have much in the way of symptoms. You know, many people are quite comfortable. They don't really have a problem with this bug, you know.
Mm-hmm. And because they live so close to Interstate 5, where you maintain that the biofuels contain aerosol-sized glyphosate, where the glyphosate has become part of the air that
right.
Is
that's
emitted.
What I'm suspecting, and whether it, of course they live in a place that has a lot of water around it too, and that's true for other places where the outbreaks, New Orleans and of course Manhattan, downtown Boston, the Queens and Brooklyn are really the epicenter of the epicenter in New York. That's why I've studied New York quite a bit, and New York is really very interesting because they have there a huge 50-acre facility that manages New York's sewer system, has done so since 1967, and it was labeled a toxic cleanup site in 2010, and 2010 they got a lot of money from the government, and they put in these digester eggs, anaerobic digester eggs. They're quite scenic, apparently. They've made them artistic, but these eggs then digest the sewer and trap the biogas, and then use it to support the energy for the plant itself. And then in 2015, they augmented it by dumping food waste on top of the sewer waste and improving the whole thing to be able to catch more methane gas, and in fact so much that they could fully supply energy to the facility and also supply extra gas to pipe into the municipal gas lines of the city. Now, we know old cities in particular, have a lot of issues with leaks in their gas lines. So if it's in the biogas, it's going to leak into the city. Mm-hmm. This is true for Chelsea as well. And Chelsea, as I said, is the epicenter of Massachusetts. It has huge problems with gas leaks. In fact, trees are being killed at places where the gas is leaking out. So I'm suspecting, glyphosate in the gas leaks as one possibility. And then when you have the diesel on top of that, because diesel and glyphosate are a really bad mix. And I found a really interesting paper about a case study of a mechanic who had used an applicator to spray Roundup, glyphosate-based herbicide, and it was clogged. And so he used a bucket of diesel fuel as a solvent to try to clean up his equipment. And he ended up coughing up blood. It was rushed to the hospital and was diagnosed with pneumonitis. And pneumonitis is basically inflammation of the lungs, which is what you see with these acute cases of COVID-19. So when you've got the biodiesel fuel on top of the biogas, both derived from heavily glyphosate-contaminated things, you might suspect that there could be some glyphosate in there. Yeah. No, I think it's possible.
But then it wasn't just diesel, and it wasn't just sewage. The other thing that Queens has is a couple of very big airports, correct?
Exactly. There's three airports around that area, and, of course, they've got highways cutting through it, too, so they're basically hit every which way. that creek.
But what about aviation? Is aviation using biogas?
Yes, they are. And many of the airlines that service New York City are using aviation biofuel. And, of course, the diesel, the biodiesel. In fact, New York has been a leader in the biodiesel industry. They actually require biofuel in home heating oil in New York City. They have to use 5% biofuel by law if they heat their home with oil. In New York City, that's the only place I know of in the world that requires that. New York gives you a tax break if you have more than 6% biodiesel in your home heating oil. So there's another possibility. There's, you know, the bios are popping up all over the place. The gas line, the home heating oil, the biodiesel fuel, and also the ethanol. We use, the United States is a big leader in bioethanol coming from corn. Now, that's GMO Roundup Ready corn. Brazil uses it from sugarcane, but sugarcane is often sprayed right before harvest. So I think both of them, there could be glyphosate in the ethanol. I mean, we haven't looked. The thing is, we don't care about this. We're not looking.
Have you actually looked at the extent to which industrial agriculture relies on glyphosate to do business?
Oh, enormously. They claim they can't function without it. I mean, they think that you know, the reason why our food is so cheap, I mean, the United States has the cheapest food per based on our income in the world, I believe. And, of course, we heavily rely on glyphosate. It makes it very, you don't have to hire people to pull the weeds and get, you know, efficient crop production because the weeds are all being killed by the glyphosate. The crop's been engineered to resist it. It's a great boon for agriculture.
And do you think agriculture could survive without it? I mean,
I do. I mean, we survived before with it. It's just that we'd have to spend more money. More people would have to be We're going to have all these people out of work because all these restaurants are getting closed. I mean, people could go to work pulling weeds. I mean, that's not impossible. Or even, you know, robotic solutions. There's ways. If we thought about it, we could figure out how not to put poison on our food. And we should be thinking about it because we're spending enormous amounts on our healthcare. You know, we have this really cheap food, and then we have this incredibly expensive healthcare. Those two are connected.
Well, around here we have this Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, which is cheap food isn't. And I think this is one of the good indications of just how cheap food is it, right there with respect to the glyphosate. So let's look at some of the diseases here that we're seeing pop up. Well, first I wanted to go to the study. You quote a study about the Swanson 2014 study.
Yes.
Which is where you plot the intense use of glyphosate and you overlay that with the incidence of COVID-19. So would you sketch that out for us?
Well, what I did is it's a level of indirect because there are all these diseases that are known to be risk factors for COVID-19, like obesity, diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, high blood sugar. These things are all risk factors for a bad outcome with COVID-19. And, of course, lung issues as well. And all of these are rising in step with the rising glyphosate usage with extremely high probability, correlation. The correlation is stunning. You talk about a p-value, and p-values, people talk about p-value, whether something is statistically significant. Something is statistically significant if the p-value is less than 0.05. You can call it. If it's 0.06, you can't call it statistically significant. If it's less than 0.05, you can. These correlations are like 0.00000001, that kind of thing. They're incredibly low. It's incredibly beautiful correlation between the rise in diabetes, the rise in obesity, and the rise in glyphosate. Rise in high cholesterol correlates very well with the rise in glyphosate usage. So, you know,
statistical
correlation doesn't mean causation, but, yeah, you know, when it's that kind of correlation, it means causation, in my opinion. I feel it has to be the case. As soon as a country starts eating Western, buying food from the United States and getting into fast foods, you know, these fast food restaurants open up in the country, then people start getting fat. They start getting diabetes. They start getting autism. All these things start showing up once people start getting exposed to glyphosate. That's what I think. I've been saying this now for a long time.
And according to that Swanson 2014 study, it's a statistical certainty.
I think so.
Wow.
Now, the other thing, of course, is the vaping. I think the vaping is a very, very...
Yeah, let's talk about the diseases here. One of them you bring up right away is COPD.
Yeah.
Which is the inability to get some breath into you, right?
Right, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, certainly a risk factor, anything in the lungs. And one thing I will say about that, in New York City, they have very high, they have 25% higher levels of emphysema, asthma, and bronchitis in that area around that 50-acre site where they process the New York sewer and produce this biogas. Around that area, they have a much higher rate of these lung diseases than they have in other parts of New York. Now, of course, there's many other contaminants in New York City. Any kind of a city has got a lot of stuff. And I think those nanoparticles are also important. So it's not just the glyphosate, but I think the glyphosate may be the critical difference between now and, say, even 5 years ago. Okay. Because of the ramping up of all these biofuels.
We're gonna have to take a quick break right now, Dr. Seneff. But when we come back, I'd like you to discuss briefly the vaping situation, which has become an epidemic of interest here in the United States. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. And what's eating us right now is glyphosate, or so it seems. And so says Dr. Stephanie Seneff, who is a senior research scientist at MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory. Right back with vaping. Biofuels seem to be a good intention. We're going to clean up the earth. We're going to use less hydrocarbons. We're going to fix our environment by using biofuels. But maybe not if it's a carrier of glyphosate from the soil and the water and everywhere into our lungs. Maybe it's not such a good idea. What are we going to do? And that this is the Food Chain Radio Program. We're going to ask Dr. Stephanie Seneff, what about the notion of vaping? I mean, isn't it a great idea that you could, instead of smoking cigarettes, you could just light up some liquid and puff it up and it wouldn't hurt your lungs or anything? But it doesn't seem to be the case, does it?
No, not at all. In fact, they've really been puzzled by this very strange lung disease. And I was aware of this disease. I was doing research on the vaping even before COVID-19 hit because I was suspecting glyphosate there. And I was just starting to play around with that idea. And it turns out that liquid is mostly glycerol and a derivative of glycerol that is used, that's burned there in order to release the nicotine that's also in the liquid. And glycerol is interesting because it's a major byproduct of the biofuel industry. When you make biodiesel fuel, you end up with a whole bunch of glycerol left over. And there were comments about what, even back when they were first considering doing biofuels, they were like, oh my God, what are we going to do with all this glycerol? We're going to glut the market with glycerol. What are we going to do with this? I suspect, and I can't prove this, it comes out of China. I mean, China was where they first started, you know, creating this concept of vaping. And they make I think they still make most of the vaping liquids that go into these products. And my suspicion is that in conjunction with developing the biofuel industry, they were trying to figure out what can we do with glycerol. Well, this might be a good way to use up some of that glycerol.
Dr. Seneff, isn't that kind of what happened with fluoride?
Yes, absolutely. Fluoride was killing cows nearby. It was so toxic, being released from the phosphate. These are the places where they're getting phosphate to use for phosphate fertilizers, and that's ending up killing the cows. And so they had to do something with it. So they just basically diluted it and spread it all across the country, poisoning everybody in the water supply, pretending that it's a good idea. I mean, fluoride is certainly another story that is, you know, equally.
Mm-hmm. Well, here you have an industrial process that makes one thing, and by the way, it also makes another thing. And so what are you going to do with the other thing? Well, let's feed it to people.
Exactly. I mean, so the glycerol, of course, you know, when you're smoking, you're not eating, so it doesn't have to be food quality glycerol. That's probably important. It probably doesn't fall under the regulations that you would normally get with food quality. You would have to process that glycerol more to clean it up, but I suspect it's not particularly clean, the glycerol that they put into these cigarettes. In any case, it causes this disease, this lung disease, that looks exactly like COVID-19. It has exactly the same symptoms and causes a massive inflammation in the lungs and difficulty breathing and a temperature. And it's very striking, a dry cough, no runny nose. That's a very striking feature of both of those diseases. So it's quite interesting.
With respect to regular colds, you have a runny nose and you have a kind of a hacky cough. And there it is. But with COVID, your nose doesn't run and you have a dry cough.
Yeah, that's a very characteristic.
And so that's the same thing we're seeing then with vapors.
Yeah, so it really feels like, you know, it's the same contamination, which it would be. The glyphosate would not know how to not get into, first of all, if it's going to get into the fuel, it's going to go both places. And so it makes sense to me. And also, they did this really interesting study on these mice. They exposed them to vaping fumes for 3 months, and then they were suspecting the vaping fumes were going to make them more sensitive to an infection. So they exposed them to a flu virus. They intentionally infected them with the flu. And sure enough, they had an acute inflammatory reaction to the flu, much more intense than the control mice did, which is exactly what we see with these people who are dying of COVID-19. They get this incredible inflammatory, their immune system goes on fire. It's too reactive. And that's because the innate immune system is broken. So the adaptive immune system kicks in. It releases all these cytokines, which causes this inflammation. And then the inflammation is what eventually destroys the lung tissue so that you can't breathe. And then you kick in with this heme oxygenase. You know, you have a whole biochemical pathway that happens that can eventually cause inflammation in the blood vessels, and then you get a thrombotic response, and then you get massive organ failure when you get all these blood clots in your small vessels. I mean, it's quite a cascade that is triggered, I think, in multiple spots by glyphosate disrupting specific proteins that I've identified.
You talk about two immune systems. You brought it up really quickly, but I think it's very significant point to what you're making here. You talk about, you know, the innate immune system and then the adaptive immune system. Would you give us a quick thumbnail of those, please?
Yeah, in fact, it's quite interesting because the innate immune system is usually quite powerful, and I think the main thing we should be telling people is to boost your innate immune system. That's how you can keep yourself safe from COVID-19. Part of that just means getting out in the sunlight, because vitamin D is a very important component of making your innate immune system strong. The innate immune system has, I could get a little bit technical here because it's quite fascinating. The innate immune system has a bunch of proteins that are called collectins, and two of them are these surfactants in the lung, surfactant A and D. And those two surfactants in particular were seen to be disrupted by the vaping fumes in these mice. They actually were able to study their lungs, and they saw that they couldn't produce enough surfactant A and surfactant D. These surfactants are very good at trapping viruses. So when they're not there, the viruses don't get trapped. And then you get more viruses, and then you get, you know, alarm bells are ringing, and you start to trigger this adaptive immune system that releases these cytokines, which are like poisons that they're trying to kill. They're trying to shoot the viruses because they can't trap them.
So the adaptive immune system kicks in when the innate immune system doesn't.
Right. It's so, not working properly.
So it's kind of it's kind of like feeding your body a toxic poison to kill the viruses then.
Right, you have to start. You know, you have to shoot the viruses, I would say, as an analogy, when you can't trap them. So selectins are really good at trapping them, and then they bring them straight to the immune cells and say, "Here's a virus, eat it and get rid of it." And the immune cell says, "Thank you very much." I mean, it can clear the viruses much better when it has these collectins working. These collectins have a long sequence of what's called collagen-like sequence that has a sequence of GXY, GXY, GXY. Every third amino acid is a glycine. I think glyphosate is disrupting collagen everywhere it is. Collagen is the most common protein in our body. 25% of our proteins in our body are collagen molecules. They make up our joints, our bones, our skin. And we have a lot of issues with chronic pain right now. We have this whole problem with opioid drug epidemic. So many people with problems with their joints and knee surgery and hip surgery and back pain. I mean, all these problems, I think they're being caused by glyphosate messing up the collagen. Because once you start putting something besides glycine at those spots, you cause disease. There's many diseases that are caused by mutations in glycines. So they know genetically. Those glycines are really important. If you start just throwing glyphosate in there randomly, you're going to mess up the collagen. And you're messing up the collagen stalks of these collectins, which are so crucial, not just the surfactant proteins, but there's other collectins too that are dependent on these collagen-like stalks. So they're all going to be messed up. And that's going to mess up the innate immune system.
And then once your innate immune system is messed up and confused and unable to collect those viruses, then your adaptive immune system steps in and starts shooting the place up.
Right, exactly. And then, of course, your antioxidant defenses are down, too, because glyphosate messes that up. There are other proteins that get disrupted. For example, glyphosate has been shown to suppress a protein that is important for renewing a glutathione. Glutathione is one of the most important antioxidants, and glyphosate will deplete your supply of glutathione. So now you've got, if you had the glutathione, you could handle those cytokines better if you had the glutathione, but you don't have enough glutathione, so that's another hit. And it just goes on and on. There's this other protein called hemoxygenase, and that kicks in once you've got all this going on. You get hemoxygenase. Normally, it breaks down heme. It does good things. It actually fixes the inflammation. But they've shown that when you've got a mutation in a specific lysine residue in hemoxygenase, you turn it into a monster. It actually causes more inflammation, releases this iron in a very toxic form called ferrol iron. It doesn't break down the heme. When you break down the heme, you turn it into something that actually is very beneficial, but the heme itself is toxic. So the whole thing breaks down, and then you've got another problem that eventually leads to the coagulation cascade. It's quite amazing. I've identified several proteins I think are critically affected by glyphosate to cause this cascade that's going on with these people.
Wow. So let's back up a little bit, and in the few minutes we have left, I'd like to kind of start from the beginning and walk people through this. First of all, glyphosate, the active ingredient in the weed killer, was known as Roundup, has become a ubiquitous part of our world. Am I wrong?
Right. You are absolutely right, particularly in the United States. We use 25% of the world's glyphosate, total glyphosate, more than any other country per population.
So we've become addicted, essentially, to its use in agriculture. I wonder if industrial agriculture could survive without it. I don't know. Because
I hope it can't, because we don't want industrial agriculture. We want organic agriculture.
Yeah. So it's here, it's there, it's in the soil, it's in the plants, it's in the crops, it's in the water, it's in the air. And now, as Dr. Stephanie Seneff says, it's in the fuel that powers our civilization, in the gasoline in our automobiles, in the diesel in our trucks, in the kerosene that burns in the jet engines, in ships, and
right.
It's in waterways. And if you follow the patterns, tell us about the patterns in the waterways, the patterns of COVID incidents and the patterns of our waterways.
Yeah, well, just the cities. I mentioned this before: New Orleans, New York City, Seattle. You know, they're all, and Washington D.C. I mean, they're all hot spots, and they're all at the mouth of a major waterway with a lot of shipping going on. It turns out that the boats actually burn a very toxic form of diesel. So that if you're near water where there's a lot of ships are going by, they're releasing a very toxic form of diesel with, you know, more nanoparticles and more of all the, you know, toxic metals and whatnot in the diesel, cyanide. I mean, there's all these different poisons that come out of the diesel. Diesel fuel is not a very healthy fuel to begin with. And then you've got on top of that what's going on with the biodiesel is an increase in the nitrogen oxides, an increase in the sulfur dioxide, and possibly glyphosate and even maybe other pesticides. Who knows? I mean, no one's looked. You know, we don't know how much it's surviving all those processes. The barges, you know, if you are a city on the water, you're more likely to be interested in biofuel development because you can take all the residue from the crops and package them up and throw them on a barge. I mean, they're hard to ship, but barges are handy. Just put them on a barge, ship them down to the plant. The plant is typically near the city, and then that plant could be spewing out God knows what in the process of turning that biomass into biofuel.
So, For the past number of years, I don't know how long you've been focused on glyphosate, but you're kind of like a pit bull that that chomped on the mailman's leg, and you're not going to let go. But have you seen a pattern, you know, that a correlation between glyphosate and the major illnesses? You point your finger at autism.
Absolutely, and also Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is also going up exactly in step with glyphosate. I think there's similar similar things going on between the autistic brain and the Alzheimer's brain.
Now, did we see the incidence of these diseases before we adapted glyphosate on a wholesale basis? I mean, did we have the same percentage of Alzheimer's? And
no, that's the thing. It's going up exactly step with glyphosate. It's rising every year. Autism and Alzheimer's. Autism is now affecting 5% of the boys in New Jersey, which is pretty shocking to me. 1 out of 20 boys. I don't know why we don't hear more about it. The rate just went up again in April. Nobody said peep about it because we don't care. We're happy to have all of our children get autism. It's not a problem for us. I don't know why. But it's going to, once they grow up, too, we've got a bunch of them growing up now, adult on autism. We don't know what to do with that. We have no facilities. I mean, we're really scrambling to figure out what to do with these people. It's going to get worse and worse now every year.
So what to do, Dr. Stephanie?
Until we figure out what to do and what we need to do to get rid of glyphosate.
Yeah, we need to get rid of, well, first of all, we have to prove to the world that glyphosate is doing what you say it's doing. And it would seem like a great place to start would be with a research scientist like Dr. Stephanie Seneff, who might just figure out a way of seeing if glyphosate is indeed in our biofuels now. Is there a way for you to do that? Is there, what can we do to help you?
I have to confess that I have not gotten involved with actually testing things. I work very, very cleanly. I just work in my with my computer, and I haven't done any of these tests, so I've sort of stayed out of that space. I may have to get into it because I keep hoping someone who normally does that sort of thing will pick up on it and take a look. But
so the way you see things is through statistics, right?
Basically. And, of course, I'm very interested in biology. I know a huge amount about biology at this point because I've gotten so fascinated with the biological mechanisms that go on and how glyphosate would disrupt them. It's quite a fun game to pay attention to the glycines because you can find the proteins that are going to be – you can predict which proteins are going to be severely affected by glyphosate, and then you can see how that works into the story for all the specific diseases. It's quite a fancy map that works out. And that's kind of kept me very, very interested. I love puzzles, and this is kind of the mother of all puzzles. But it's amazing because I can find specific proteins that people are finding are disrupted in association with certain diseases which are correlated with glyphosate. It's a giant puzzle.
Well, and let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, because if anybody would know, it would be you. What can we do out here to protect ourselves from glyphosate?
Right, and that's the big question. Cause I now say stay away from the highways, you know, really take the back roads, and I've been doing that myself. Don't go near the highways if you can help it, because they're going to be, I think, especially toxic with the toxic air. Air pollution, I think, is a big problem. They know air pollution is a big problem with COVID-19, by the way. There have been studies that have shown striking correlations with the number of nanoparticles and the risk of bad outcome.
Like
that's
Wuhan. Well, we're out of time right now, Dr. Stephanie Seneff. Thank you so much for joining us. And hey, folks out there, remember Michael Olson's third law of the food chain. Cheap food isn't. And this is a good story that proves why. Thank you, Dr. Stephanie.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.